is interview session number one with James. Recorded April 5th, 2008. Copyright 2008 Wingmakers. All rights reserved. All right, we'll get started. First, I'd like to welcome James to my humble abode here in Minneapolis.
Yes, thank you for having me, especially on short notice, Mark.
It's a great honor to have you and to be hosting you here in my own home. Before we start, James suggested I give some background on the nature of this interview. So first off, my name is Mark Hempel. I've been doing the web management for Wingmakers, Lyricus, and Event Temples since 1998. So about 10 years I've been involved in it. And the email that comes in from these sites comes to me. So one of the types of requests that I see, maybe two, three times a month, is from publications and radio shows wanting to do an interview with James. As most of you know now, James has chosen to be anonymous as the creator of these websites, so he's not exactly available for those interviews. And, you know, typically in his style, he politely declines. I guess it was about 2 years ago that I approached James with the idea that I would interview him using the most common questions that I see in the email I get, sort of an FAQ, and just kind of get his, you know, his unique angle, and also let people kind of hear his personality a little bit. And for whatever reason, that never happened. But then out of the blue, about a week ago, Sarah called, who works with James, and mentioned that James had a layover in Minneapolis en route to Los Angeles for a meeting. And he'd have about 4 hours, and he had suggested that we do an interview. So here we are. I have James in my cozy work studio, where I do my regular job. It's the 5th of April, 2008, and actually, by Minnesota standards, it's a pretty nice day. I can actually crack the window open a bit, so thanks for bringing the warmer weather with you.
Well, I'll take no credit for that, but the feeling of this space is quite good, I agree. I would suggest that the listener imagine that they're sitting at the same table with us, as this will help them feel the information better with their heart. We're planning to let the interview proceed, yes, without stops and starts, so it will be one continuous, informal chat. And one that I hope will touch your innermost self.
Oh, good. I'm glad you added that. Do you want to add anything else before we start?
No, I think that's a good introduction. We can begin.
Okay, good. One of the most common questions I get relates to the whole reality you created around the Wingmakers and Lyricus teaching order. I think people understand that it's a mythology to some extent, but the essence of the question that I get is, to what degree is the information real? So could you please comment on that, James?
Yes. Well, I understand the interest in knowing what is real and what is not real. It's fundamental to our natures, but in the case of an encoded mythology, it's not essential to distinguish between the real and unreal, so much as it is to feel its effects on your behavior, your point of view. When you read the materials, do new avenues of perception open up? Do you begin to see a new geometry into the subtle fields that surround you at all times? Do you feel more connected to your higher purpose? These are the more vital issues that require contemplation and review. I'll elaborate just a bit. The Wingmaker's mythology is an encoded work, which is to say that there are frequencies of light and sound that are woven into the music, chamber paintings, philosophy, story, and poetry. These frequencies are subtle in that they are felt more by the heart than they are reasoned by the mind. Now, those who review the materials with only their mind, especially a mind that is settled in the historical view of God and spirit, they will find a very different experience than one who brings both their heart and mind and releases historical views. Mythologies and stories are actually the preferred communication of Lyricus, because they can appear more innocent, without the usual embroidery of fact-checking, mental analysis, comparison, and so forth, which are all attributes of the intellect and ego. To the extent possible, we try to diminish the possibility that the ego and intellect dominate the interpretation of the materials. You see, the historical mind is weighed down by the words and opinions of thousands of writers from the beginning of human history. The real import of the Wingmaker's materials is to, in effect, dislodge the person from the historical mind and move them into a sense of connection to their higher self and the spirit that supports it. In doing this, the person can more easily access the tone of equality or the intuitive faculty inside their heart, which opens the channel to the living truth.
I'm glad you mentioned the living truth. In one of your latest writings, which, by the way, is a story called The Living Truth, you refer to this concept. So even back in 1998, when the Wingmaker site was released, you were thinking that this was the main or the core teaching?
The main teaching of Lyricus is to connect people more firmly with their higher selves and the spirit that unites each human consciousness to the cosmic or universal being. You see, Wingmakers is part of the facilitation of the Grand Portal, and the only way that humanity will open up to the higher dimensions is when individually, person by person, the entire species begins to see the truth is alive and well within themselves, while relatively speaking, it is lifeless and irrelevant outside themselves. Again, in the historical context of writings, the living truth is always relevant because you access it via the universal field that derives from the first source of the Creator. This universal field is also known as spirit, and spirit-filled information can only pass from spirit to the higher self, or the material self. And when it arrives within the material self or human instrument, when it successfully catches this information, it creates new perspective, which in turn creates new behaviors. Now, these new behaviors may not be noticeable in a short period of time, but they are nonetheless reshaping the life path of the individual. They create the ability of the individual to recycle their divine energies amongst the human condition, and this is done principally through the six heart virtues of appreciation, compassion, forgiveness, humility, understanding, and valor. So the expression of the six heart virtues is the outgrowth of this deeper connection between the human self and the divine or higher self, quite independent of life conditions, what astrological sign you've been born into, whether you are male or female, whether you are well educated or not, or your social standing. In short, the six heart virtues create the vibrational climate in your local environment that brings forward your higher self as an agent of spirit. I'll speak more about the living truth, but for now I think this provides a good understanding, or introduction at least.
Okay, let me switch to another question that I get frequently from readers, which is the Wingmaker's materials, at least within the interviews and the Ancient Arrow book, have references to, I guess I'll call it dark forces at least. And for some, they stir up feelings of fear and frustration. You know, these are forces we read or hear about all over the place. I guess I'm talking about the Illuminati and the secret government operations and UFO cover-ups and, you know, that kind of stuff. More of the conspiratorial end of the continuum. And how do these elements fit into the notion of the higher self becoming a more vibrant part of our life? Because I think to some it feels more like a distraction.
It's a good question. Let me try to explain it this way. You'll notice that the first floor of the structure that Lyricus built consists of the Wingmaker's materials. When you design a building, the main floor is where people enter the building. Even if that building has 100 or more stories, everyone enters through the ground floors. Now, if that skyscraper is sitting in a busy intersection, it has entrances from all four sides of the building. Some on the main level, some on the ground perhaps. In the same way, the Wingmaker's materials have many different access points, because some people will resonate to the materials in the Neruda interviews that speak of government conspiracy and extraterrestrial influences. Others will find the philosophy particularly meaningful. Perhaps others will find the art or music to draw from. However they enter the structure, from which entrance, it doesn't really matter, so long as they enter the building and proceed to higher levels of the structure. Now, the matter of feeling fear or frustration is a common side effect once people better understand the dark forces and learn how they try to manipulate the systems of culture and government in their favor. But this is also part of the activation, because the individual must again choose to be led by these forces or disengage from them and discern their subtle influence. We don't turn a blind eye to these forces, nor do we fear them. Instead, we see them as part of our family that have lost their connection to the higher frequencies of love, and we send our compassion to them. I would suggest to readers of Wingmakers, do not stop your exploration of these materials in the Neruda interviews or the Ancient Arrow book, but continue your investigation into the Lyricus and Event Temple's materials, as these will acquaint you with the higher levels of the Lyricus structure.
And what are these higher levels, James?
Well, the highest level is the Grand Portal itself. And perhaps later I'll add some textures and details to the meaning of the Grand Portal. For now, I'll just say that it is the ultimate goal of the structure. After Wingmakers came the disclosure of the Lyricus Teaching Order, or LTO, this was the next level of the structure that was built out so as to make clear that the mind behind the Wingmakers was not affiliated with the subject of its writings, namely the ACIO, or Incunabula, the alpha organization of the Illuminati. So the LTO was disclosed in its role in seeding the human understanding of its purposeful journey to the Grand Portal. This was done to clarify the purpose of the Wingmaker's materials. The next level after Lyricus was more recently launched, and it is the Event Temples. Event Temples is the activity-based level of transitioning from the abstractions of philosophy or mythology and placing the focus on living a love-centered life through the expression of the six heart virtues. These three levels, Wingmakers, Lyricus, and Event Temples, are aligned and coherent expressions of the one goal of our human family, uniting in the behaviors of love and collectively knocking on the door of the fifth dimension and meshing these energetics of the fifth dimension with the human domain. That is the Grand Portal.
Okay. Are there going to be other levels between the Event Temples and the Grand Portal?
Yes, certainly, but I'd prefer not to disclose these at this time. But let me say this. Before there can be a collective awakening, there must be an established and sufficient core of people who are functioning on the higher frequencies of awareness. Globally, this might be between 10 and 12 million people. This core is not centralized, nor is it the province of one religion or belief system. It is spread across many, many belief systems, and these individuals who are functioning on these higher frequencies will be uniting on an internal basis, not external, not through the trappings of human organizations or religious structures. They will join together through the universal field of consciousness and blend their hearts as one. And in this unification, the fear-based radiations of those who linger in the lower frequencies, they will be subdued, calmed, and a new sense of trust and hope will emerge. And as messy as the human condition may become, these 10 million islands will rise as a new continent of consciousness, one whose human circuitry is prepared to live a love-centered life quite independent of the external view and events. The structure of Lyricus is one of the buildings that will house these people and help them connect and shine.
Are you talking about 2012?
I suppose in a roundabout way I am.
Yeah. I have to say that the subject of 2012 is a frequent question that I get as well. Lots of different perspectives ranging from, you know, like end times, the second coming, to a new golden age. It seems like it's all over the map, and it's an odd thing because you would expect it to have more of a convergence feel to it. And yet there seems to be about as divergent view on 2012 and what to expect as any event I've ever heard about. So can you speak to that issue? I mean, what exactly will happen in 2012, and how will it be different than our current situation?
Mm-hmm. Well, first let me say that the 2012 date is more of a culmination than it is an event unto itself. The process has been underway since the earliest coalescence of atoms into molecules, into stars, into angelic hosts, and into human creation. It's a process that it's a vibrational pattern set forth by First Source, and therefore it replicates itself in ever-increasing efficiency and coherence. Earth is an unusual planet among the mysterious number of planets that dot the universe, and it is quite alive in its own right. It is nearing an alignment with this luminous field of First Source that enables a planet to shift its dimensional frequency. All of us, planets and creatures alike, are ascending dimensionally through time-space. This ascension is not arbitrary or capricious in any way. Rather, it is the plan for Source in action. Many people I know are expecting 2012 to be a major event, as this alignment between Earth and its galactic center is arrived at. In a real sense, the global community of 10, perhaps 12 million people who are operating in the higher frequencies will notice the greatest change, and this change will be expressed in a heightened perception, an intuitive knowing, more of a fine-grained intuitive knowing, and a deepening emotional connection to their fellow man. Their ability to live a love-centered life by expressing the six heart virtues will be enhanced manyfold. This core group, having already developed the habits of fluid understanding, relaxed perceptions, and an unbreakable trust in the benevolence of the universe and its superintelligence, will have new creative powers because they will operate as one and not as individuals. At first, this operation will be murky to all but a few. Perhaps 1 out of 3,000 will feel it and see it. And I'm speaking of the 3,000 being from the group of the 10 to 12 million who are operating on those higher frequencies. So these small fractional percentage will see it and feel it in the coming years, and more will activate and become aware of this collective intelligence as well, as it becomes a very powerful co-creative entity of its own accord. Now, those who live in fear-based realities will, for the most part, have their fears amplified, as these incoming frequencies and radiations create a pace of change that makes for hardships in their life. Emotionally, they may even become more disconnected and withdrawn. So you see, 2012, it really represents different experiences for different states of consciousness. It will not be a singular event, like a solar eclipse that can be seen in most parts of the world. But quite frankly, no one really knows what it will be like with any precision, as it has no exact likeness, and its final chapter has not yet been written. So in this, the final chapter, we are all playing improvisational roles. There is no script, and there is really no director in the formal sense of the word. Instead, we are allowed by First Source to choose our destiny, live a love-centered life and follow Earth's ascendancy, or live a fear-based life and remain in the third-dimensional frequency grid with its inherent limitations intact. In the final assessment, 2012 is a choice. Only those who are willing to undergo a fundamental revisioning, a new perspective, let's say, of the nature of reality, and open and avail themselves to the power of collective intelligence and how this intelligence restructures the face of humanity, only they will really see 2012 as it is. All others will see illusions and, in a sense, be forced to live in the shadows of the real experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know this is one of those really broad questions, James, but I saw an article the other day that said the number one, or I don't know, maybe number two thing that was being searched on in China, and I'm speaking of like the Google of China, if you will, was the phrase, why are we here? So, in other words, why are any of us incarnated at this time, and what is our purpose? Again, I know it's a really broad question, but I actually get a lot of email around that subject from people. And when I saw this search result from the China Google, it just sort of like, okay, so it made my list, as you can see here. Oops, sorry. And so I just wanted to get your perspective on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, people who live in these times, they want to feel a personal involvement in the collective human destiny. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the vast majority, other than voting for their politicians, don't really have a sense of this. They are passive observers looking into the arena of action, but not really participating, or so they believe. Everyone who is incarnate at this time has a higher self, and this higher self is aware of the specialness of this time, but the ego personality within the human instrument is not easily accessible to the higher self, and unless it has been properly conditioned and prepared, the ego personality will become like an agoraphobic who is afraid of wild, expansive places and simply wants to remain enclosed in its own reality. If you are here on Earth, wearing the human instrument, you are here out of choice and purpose. The choice was made to experience this time, this alignment with the galactic center and the intensification of the creation beam of First Source. The purpose was to ease the experience of shifting from the old systems and reality models to the new, both for societies and individuals, as well as our planet and the creatures therein. That's why we are here. Now, you could say there's more to it than that, and I wouldn't disagree with you, but the other reasons do not carry the same potency of truth. The truth is that we have a responsibility to our fellow man, creatures, cultures, and Earth to ascend in unity and ease. This is why we are here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you have answered this question before, but it's such a common question that I can't resist asking it again. So can you respond in your own words?
Mark.
Yes.
You can ask the question.
Yeah, okay. Once I start talking, it's hard to stop.
I understand. It's a discipline we can all probably practice a bit more.
Okay, so here's the question. Actually, two questions. Why did you decide to release all of these materials anonymously, and why are you becoming more and more accessible now? I mean, agreeing to do this interview now, for example.
That was actually pretty good, Mark. Very concise.
I tried.
Now to your first question. I would say that the main reason representatives of the LTO do not choose to be visible is that they prefer, as part of their mission, to shine the focus onto the materials itself, not their personalities. No one within the LTO is interested in establishing themselves as a spiritual authority or a way-shower. We are actually quite reticent in this regard, because we well understand that at this stage of humanity's awakening, it's truly about cooperative intelligence, not the singular personality. There is no Messiah who will be leading this event this time. It is too profound a shift for any one individual or organization to orchestrate, or even hope to orchestrate. Nor is it desirable at this stage in the evolution of humanity for it to depend on a human or angelic or even godly personality. It creates separation, similar in the way that money creates the haves and the have-nots. As I said before, there is a co-creative entity that will be birthed in the coming years, and this entity is the collective of millions of humans who have learned to access and transmit the higher frequency emanations of First Source within the human domain. These frequencies will interpenetrate everything in this realm, marinating even the physical structures in its higher vibratory field, and as a result, stimulating all life to a new vibratory rate. The LTO is here to share encoded materials to help facilitate this activation of this collective consciousness. It is not necessary for me to go on the lecture circuit and promote books and so forth in order to accomplish this mission. This mission can be done anonymously, and indeed is easier to do so because it reminds people that the effort is their own, the connection to God is their own, the will to summon their higher self is their own, and the knowledge they truly need is minimal, because they only require activation and the will to sustain and evolve this activation. This is not a time for information greed. Rather, it's a time of heart-centered behaviors.
Okay. That's good stuff, by the way. I'm enjoying this a lot. James, you speak a lot about activation and how each of us can access the higher frequencies. Can you speak to the process of activation and how it comes about?
Yes, certainly. It is a very important topic, and one that is particularly close to my heart. You see, you can be born into a body, educated at the finest universities, live the perfect life from the biological perspective, but if the access to the universal currents or living truth is shut down, if these currents are not flowing through and into your human consciousness, then you are not really incarnate, at least not as you were intended by First Source, your Creator. Your incarnation is not complete, in other words. So this is a very important subject, as we have billions of people who are incarnated upon this planet, but are operating at a diminished spiritual capacity. With our eyes and ears, we perceive but a small portion of our universe. The light and sound frequencies that our biological circuitry perceives and processes is fractional. And when you add space to that equation, it is infinitesimally small. It was understood that the human instrument would have its limitations, but like all things that are designed by our Creator, there are compensatory factors, which in this case is the human emotional system. Our emotions are what connect us to the broader universe and the energetics that radiate from First Source. When one lives a love-centered life, practicing the six art virtues to the best of their abilities, in the smallest nooks and crannies of their life, they unfold around themselves an antenna. This antenna is etheric. In other words, it exists in a state of energy that our eyes and ears do not detect, and is designed like a finely tuned instrument that both receives and transmits the radiations of the higher frequencies from First Source. So this antenna surrounds our human instrument, occupying the same space as our body, And yet, because it's composed of light frequencies of a high nature, it's not bound to the reality and limitations of the third dimension, like our physical body, for instance. When our hearts are relaxed, loving and understanding, appreciative, trusting, the etheric antenna becomes receptive, like a flower opening its petals to the sun. If our heart is anxious or troubled or angry or tumultuous, the same antenna, similar to the way a sensitive plant closes its petals at sunset, passes into disorder, and its fine-grained connection to the higher frequency radiations of first source are cut off or diminished. This etheric antenna, from a biological standpoint, is anchored in the seven glands of the endocrine system, which act as receptors that translate the higher frequencies of the spirit domain to the body and mind, so that the mind can process the encoded information and the body can act upon it.
Mm-hmm. Is this the same thing as the seven chakra system?
Yes. Now, when people express anger or hatred, especially over time, their antenna can be damaged, or more precisely, its sensitivity is diminished, causing a vicious cycle, because at some level, they realize that they're not receiving the ultra-fine perceptions, which is their birthright. It is precisely these ultra-fine perceptions that activate the individual. It's important to note that this antenna is never damaged from external emotions. In other words, negative emotions directed at you or others from an external source. Instead, it's diminished only by your own emotions of hatred, anger, frustration, and resentment. So you see, your spirit's presence in your life is directly proportional to this etheric antenna's well-being. It's a very delicate, wondrous, even miraculous facet of the human instrument and its bond with spirit. And as this antenna is unfurled, awakened, activated, strengthened, utilized, and secured, it broadcasts the incoming frequencies of light and sound, or the higher frequency radiations of first source, to the energetic field around you, bringing you a more complete awareness of the multidimensional world in which you live. Now, this luminous field that surrounds you is not an island anymore. As I said, the islands are rising up as a continent of consciousness, and this continent is the collective entity I spoke of earlier.
So what is the activation then?
The higher self, working in conjunction with spirit, is always the activator. It instructs the human instrument on the fundamental truths of the six heart virtues even before the individual can read or speak. These are innate understandings that derive from the shared pool of wisdom that is the living truth. And this pool of wisdom is the very same that angels and enlightened beings draw from. This is the access that every student of spirit seeks. Once it is found, it becomes your own. Once it is found, you realize that the circuitry of the heavens, of the material galaxies, star systems, and right down to the planet, and your own human instrument, they are all aligned in a coherent design that makes the access to the shared pool of wisdom possible. The only thing that you need to do is to activate the etheric antenna transmitter, which is another way of saying, listen to your heart, and then sustain and expand this activation by living a love-centered life.
It almost sounds too simple.
Yes, it is simple. There is no complexity here because it is natural. It is with the grain, where the friction of effort is removed from the task. And because of the incoming energetics of our time, the task is even simpler. I understand that there are many complex techniques related to posture and breathing and mantras and visualizations and so forth. I don't discount these techniques or approaches. Activation is a highly personal process, and if your higher self leads you to undertake these approaches, then do so by all means. But also remember that the complexity can mislead. It can create a separation from your spiritual understanding that lives ever-present in your heart. What matters is not how much we know about the spiritual techniques of the so-called masters, or even how well we exercise this knowledge. What matters is our ability to love and to express this love into the finest grain realities in our life.
And James, when you say finest grain realities, could you elaborate a little bit on that so we know what you mean?
Mm-hmm. First, let me get a little glass of water. Just a moment, please. I think it's has to do with the inner guidance, because without this inner guidance, you'll have a hard time finding the finest grain realities, as they are very often unnoticed in the everyday experience of a typical person. And this is because of the old paradigm that follows us around like a tired shadow. It tells us to not talk to strangers, to not look into the eye of a person, to obsess about the external or outward appearances of things, to be quiet unless you're spoken to. All of these things dull our connection to the inner spirit that sustains and evolves our activation. So it's necessary to express the six heart virtues into the smallest corners of your life. I won't give specific examples, though I understand that could be useful perhaps, but with each example I could reveal, I may conceal another inadvertently. And again, the whole purpose of the post-activation journey is to become sovereign and self-responsible. All I will say is to look into the areas of your life that seem insignificant to your mind, but have a certain magnetism to your heart. We have a saying in Lyricus that the routines and blinders of the intellect are often the playground and windows of the soul. You want your sense of identity to be rooted in the unified field of consciousness, which is the shared property of all. If you can bring your identity to this perspective and sustain it in the face of life's resistance, then you will have left the old paradigm and the eternal being that lives in your heart will provide the inner guidance you need.
James, I'm going to shift to a more personal question, if I may, since we're it seems like we're running out of time. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Good. I've been studying these teachings since I, and I'm not sure I even should call them teachings, but since I got involved in Wingmakers, and I have to say I've learned, I think, a pretty good amount of information. But I still don't have what I'd call, or at least what you were referring to, this clear connection to the higher frequencies. And I'm not sure I'd qualify really as a spiritual person, since I still get pretty angry when someone cuts me off in traffic, sometimes with more intensity than I care to even talk about. But I guess my point is how do we know if we're on the right path or doing the right things?
Your condition, I'm happy to report, is very normal. Mm-hmm. Being vulnerable is part of this world experience, and it is also part of what connects you to others. If you hold yourself at some lofty height, you can become unapproachable, or worse yet, indifferent to the plight and issues of the everyday person. You see, the spiritual writings, by and large, are written by those who have been facilitated by spirit to produce the information as a means to rekindle human awareness of the Creator and the heart virtues that it lives through. These writers were often writing from a higher dimensional framework where the gravity of real problems is sort of stuck off to the margins, if you will. Add to that the stressors that dictate our world, and it's not an easy thing to remain a loving and sensitive heart. And so we do yoga and meditation, breath work, toxicity assessments, and 100 other things to support our journey. It's important to understand that all are equal in the eyes of God, whether you have ascended to the lofty plains of purity or you are just starting your climb from the desert floor. You are valued no more or less. And this is because we are all projections of a unified field of consciousness. And while, to be sure, we are individually focusing this field to conform to our unique character and tendencies, at the bottom line, as they say in business, we are a family of explorers and co-creators. We're divine collaborators who, wearing the human biology, sometimes clumsily make mistakes. When you experience the material world, know that you are not experiencing it alone. And this is a very subtle distinction I'm about to make, but it's an important one. You can converse with God. You can have the conversations of truth and love, and this is well and fine because it is educational. But as you go through life, it's indispensable to feel the presence of God, to experience the terrestrial world together as one. This is co-creation, and it is a sizable step up from education.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I'm clear about that last part, James. Could you elaborate on what you mean when you say, you know, co-creation is one thing, education is another?
Yes, that's precisely why I said it's a subtle distinction. The conversations between an individual and their creator are important exchanges of energy and information, but it is always you and God, a plurality of exchange, if you will. Co-creation is not a plurality so much as it is the exploration of the terrestrial world as one. God and you are one, and that as you go through your life experience, God sees and hears through your human instrument, nudging you this way or that because you have invited its presence into your heart. Now remember, I suggested earlier that the heart, or human emotional system, is the primary organ of perception relative to the ultra-fine frequencies of the higher dimensions. If you invite God into your heart, if you feel this presence blooming, then as you experience your life, you can feel that it is being done creatively in the moment, together with God, not as you are experiencing life and then reporting back to God through prayer or meditation where you seek advice on this decision or that. This is how you know when you're on the right path. Let me add one more thing. Your ego has an eternal counterpart, and the purpose your ego has held in high regard is rooted in an historical context that is rapidly slipping into irrelevance. The landscape of creation is being renovated, so to speak. To allow for a chain reaction of consciousness that will sweep this planet and carry it and its creatures to new vibratory fields. Now, the ego has been locked away in fear and lack of trust. It is as if these qualities were hard-coded into the human species. Ideologies, whether they are science or religion-based, are nonetheless tethered to fear. They block the emanations of the higher frequencies that the human instrument was designed to function on. This is precisely why the individual is sovereign, and why it is so critical that they activate themselves and live a love-centered life, because it is only then that a sufficient number of humans can start the chain reaction of consciousness, the consciousness of eternity. The material forces will respond to this frequency and become the actualizing force of eternity upon the terrestrial plane. In Lyricus, we say it this way: the master of matter will become the slave of eternity. I realize that I've moved off on some very wide-ranging concepts, but your answer is in this nest of concepts. You'll just have to sort it out a bit.
Thanks, James. Yeah, I'm sure I'll be doing that. While I've been listening, I find that much of what you've said, I have a feeling that I'm going to have to listen a few more times before I'm able to really make sense of it.
You may be right, but don't worry so much about making sense of it. This is as much a psychological process as it is a comprehension. It is a process of identity shift, so each individual can shift from the currents of fear and guilt to the currents of love and understanding. Because only in the currents of love do you realize that you are not the form you animate, but rather the energetic frequencies of the animation itself. And these frequencies, where do you suppose they derive from?
I guess I would say first source.
Yes, from our Creator. And these frequencies, they dance in the moment. They do not know the past or future. They live in the now. So thoughts and feelings that search into the past or future, they can restrict the circulation of these delicate frequencies. And it is these frequencies, like the Pied Piper, lead you to the point, the very moment, where you are open to transformation. Now, we have a saying that goes like this. If you are peeling an orange, do not be thinking about an apple. In other words, stay in the moment, because this is where the frequencies of animation occur. This is where your power lies.
Okay, that makes sense. Thanks, James. I appreciate that. Mateo. Shoot. For those of you listening to this, our cat Mateo just jumped up on the table and is visiting James. Yeah, he seems to like you.
There is no reason he shouldn't. What kind of cat is he?
He's a ragdoll, the kind that go limp when you pick them up, hence the name.
He's very relaxed, very soothing.
Yeah, I don't know if the mics are picking it up, but I can sure hear him purring from even where I'm sitting. Do you want me to take him, James?
No, he's fine. If he wants to lay on the table right
some
here.
Decency.
Well, if nothing else, he's a very good diversion. You see, this is the way a spirit works, and is a good example of the fine-grained details of life. We're in this certain frequency for 30, 40 minutes, and Mateo is just fine. And suddenly he jumps up on the table and asserts himself. Well, to me, it's spirit's nudge to ease off the gas pedal a bit, return to the playful side of life. It's all a rhythm, you see.
Yeah. I follow you. James, do you still want to take a break?
Yes, let's do that. We can stretch our bodies and refresh ourselves. I know you wanted to show me some things, so let's do that now, and we can resume our talk in 15, 20 minutes.
Yep. Okay? Signing off for now. Thank you.